This is the heartbeat of the conservative movement, these small rural areas. And oftentimes you all get neglected, all right, by your folks in the Capitol and also in Washington, D.C. And I know you have representation. I'm not here to disparage any of your representatives, but most of the time these areas are underserved by the people that you send out, you know, to the state capitol or to Washington, D.C. You only see them at election time, right?
Yeah.
They come in, they might stop in, they might drop in. I mean, how many times do you see the governor here? How many times do you see the, you know what? But they still work for you. Okay. How often do you see the U.S. senators? You know, here in Paducah, right? It just doesn't happen that much. And that's wrong. And I understand these are big states. And I understand that there's, a lot to do for these individuals. They are very busy, but they're still public servants. They're servants of the people. And somehow they got to kind of make it work. They all have staffs, paid staff. At least send a staffer, you know, to some of your town hall meetings, to, you know, some of your festivals. Just send a representative. That's all I ask of these busy individuals. They don't oftentimes do that. So whenever I get invited to these rural areas, I always take the opportunity to come, and you learn a lot. You folks are the salt of the earth. You really are. You're just red-blooded Americans. Like me, you love your freedom, your liberty, you love your country.
Yeah.
And you're just trying to get through life, okay, and take advantage of everything that it has to offer. And I know you get disparaged. I know the names they call you, you know, in these rural areas. You know, some damning names and some ugly names. But I know it's not true because I get to meet you. Most of the people that cast these sorts of dispersions on these rural areas, they've never met the people. They've never taken the time. They've never gone there. And yet they form these, you know, rumors and whatnot. And it hurts me because I know what's in your heart. And I know what's in your heart because I take the time to come and I take the time to meet you. And I know the way that you treat me and you accept me like I'm one of you. Okay, and that's all I ask. You know, I'm an American, first and foremost. The heck with all the rest of the stuff. I don't really care about, you know, the partisan stuff. Yeah, you know, that gets in the way a little bit. The politics gets in the way. But that's part of life and it's part of what's going to happen. But I try to cut through that because, like I said, I'm on this mission. And I get pushed a lot to run for another office. You know, I was elected sheriff for nearly 20 years in Milwaukee County, won four times for four-year terms. And I took that position, and not through my own doing, by the way, but some things happen, and you seize opportunities in life when you see some leadership is needed. And I try to bring that, and I was able to take that position as a sheriff of Milwaukee County, Wisconsin, and elevated into a national profile. Like I said, that wasn't by design. I never could have drawn it up that way. But it was seizing these opportunities for leadership, for spreading freedom and liberty, for supporting the Constitution, for supporting the rule of law. And I just kind of accepted it. I wasn't looking for it, but I thought, you know what? Well, maybe there's a higher calling that's saying, David, we need you here, or I need you here. I need you to do this, to fulfill this role. And so I took it upon myself to do that. But it was never about the next, you know, office that was going to run for something else. That you see these people always in search, they're on a political career. I was on a public service career, and that was protecting communities, protecting my community as a law enforcement officer for nearly 40 years. Wasn't looking for the next, you know, rung on the ladder, political ladder. And I still to this day get pushed back home. But even all across the country, hey, you got to run for something. You got to, and I know I don't. I'm on a different mission right now. This is not about me. I don't make this about me. I make it about the mission. And there's a saying about a mission. And that saying goes like this. When you're on a mission, make sure you travel with people who are on the same mission that you are. And that's you folks. And that's why I'm in Paducah right now. Now, I'd be remiss And the way I handle these periods after a big election, when I say big election, they're all big. Well, one of the things that I try not to do, and I try to remind people, you know, I don't lecture to people. I just say, hey, I got a bunch of experiences, and I just want to share those experiences with you. I want to give you these experiences. Do what you want with them. I don't know everything. I don't come and talk to people as if I'm the smartest guy in the room. I am not the smartest guy in this room. You know how I know that? I don't need to be. It doesn't matter whether I'm the smartest guy, but I have some experiences that you all don't have, and you all have some experiences that I don't have. And what I look for is opportunities to share those experiences. Hey, here's how it's looking to me from my vantage point. Like I said, I've been all over this country. I've been in 40 of the 50 states, or in Obama's case, 40 of the 55 states. All right, and my goal is to get to all 50 states, to share my message, to look for fighters. I'm in search of fighters, ladies and gentlemen. That's the mission I'm on. If we're going to defend freedom and liberty throughout the United States, you have to have fighters. I'm trying to build a critical mass of people so that when the call goes out that the fight is on, I know I'm not going to be standing out there by myself. All right, I'm not stupid. And I didn't get this far in life by doing stupid things like thinking I could take on this big fight that we have here in this country by myself. I have to have fighters with me. Okay, so when people say, hey, you got to run for this, I got pushed real hard in the last cycle to run for U.S. Senate. All right, and ladies and gentlemen, that part of this, I'm done with. I don't need a title. All right, to get back in that sewer, and politics is a sewer. It's ugly, it's mean, it's nasty, and I'm not afraid of that. I faced that as the sheriff of Milwaukee County, a county that is real liberal, and I was a rock-solid conservative. So for me, it was a fight every day, and I saw the underside of politics. I saw the ugly underbelly of politics, called the worst names that you could be called, attacked my family. You know, with the mean and nastiness that politics is. And I could deal with it, but I felt bad for my family because they couldn't. They look and they go, that's not you. These things they're calling you and saying about, that's not you. I go, no, but that's part of what you have to endure. It's like a rite of passage in politics. You have to be able to put up with that crap. But I'm done with that. I'm a foot soldier now. I'm a foot soldier in this fight for freedom and liberty. I'm here now to help other people. That's part of the mission. Other people who want to take those positions on, because I have some experiences, like I said, and I want to share those experiences. Now, I mentioned a rock solid conservative. What does that mean? Because that's a question you should ask me when I say that term conservative. Because that term, it gets misused by people running for political office. Mainly on the Republican side, right? That's why I said I don't get into Republicans, Democrats. It doesn't make any difference to me. I'm a conservative. I'm going to fight for conservative causes. Now, what does it mean to me to be a conservative? Here's what it means. I have five pillars. I have five. You could have whatever ones you want. Number one, limited government. Amen. How do you limit government? A restrained federal bureaucracy, and you lower taxes. The more money you send and we send to Washington, D.C., the more the bureaucracy grows, I should say, and the more government expands, an intrusive government expanding into our lives. So that's number one, limited government. Number two, I stand for military superiority and safe streets here at home. Okay, number three, that the Constitution, the thing I took an oath to uphold many times throughout my career, every time I got promoted, you take an oath. And I'm old school, ladies and gentlemen. When I took the oath, each time, my left hand was on the Bible. And here's why that was important to me, because you don't have to do that anymore. And you also don't have to say, so help me God, at the end of it, right? They cut all that out, but I'm old school. Because not only was I swearing to the people of Milwaukee County that I would do this stuff, uphold the Constitution, enforce the law, I was swearing to God.
Amen.
And being human, sometimes, you know, part of the human condition, you let people down. But I knew God was watching. And it was important to me that God knew what was in my heart. Even when you make mistakes, all right, when you say something you shouldn't say, that's okay. God forgives. Sometimes humans do, but sometimes they don't. So that's number three. The Constitution supports individuals, not groups. These are not group rights, ladies and gentlemen. Yet we sit up here and we allow government officials, elected individuals, to make these group rights. They're not, they're individual rights, and they're God-given. Mm-hmm. Here's what I mean by their individual rights. If some idiot takes a semi-automatic rifle into a movie theater, a school, a shopping mall, and shoots the place up, like he's at some kind of video arcade, and mows down dozens of people. And then all of a sudden, we're going to allow politicians to say, we need gun controls, to which I go, time out. These are not group rights. You don't punish an entire group of gun owners and Constitution lovers because of something that somebody else did. You punish that individual for that act. Yet we sit up here and every time it happens. Now, we can blame the left, right? They do that. Right? Oh, gun control. We need gun control. Ban this, ban that. Republicans do it too.
Yeah.
Some. They did it after that ugly tragedy in Uvalde, where Mitch McConnell, your senator. That's quite all right. It's between you and him. But he is from Kentucky, right? Put together a group of Republicans and told them, work with Democrats to come up with something. And they called, you know, the safety, whatever they did. He goes, well, you know, they're calling for. And I said, you can't take those rights away from me. See, we need to remind them at that point in time that these are individual rights. I didn't do anything. In our system, ladies and gentlemen, our system of jurisprudence is based on punishing those people directly responsible for something, not somebody who wasn't or didn't do it. But that's what we do. When I have to wait longer and I have to jump through more hoops to buy a firearm, you're denying me my constitutional right. Okay, so that's number three, that the Constitution protects individuals and not groups. Number four, the rule of law. The rule of law must prevail in this country, and that is the hallmark of the Constitution of the United States, the rule of law. We enact laws, and then we follow those laws, and everybody's held to the same standard, which we don't always see. But yet the rule of law must prevail. That's number four. Number five, I'm a states' rights guy. 10th Amendment, more rights for the states. So those are my five pillars of being a conservative. At least you may have different ones. That's okay. I'm not saying if you don't agree with these, you're not a conservative. I'm not saying that. But at least I can articulate it to where it makes sense to people. Because too often we have people running around, especially at election time, like I said, I'm a conservative. And we don't challenge them. But what does it mean? Oh, really? You're in Congress and you're a conservative and you voted to approve that $1 trillion stimulus package? You voted to expand government and increase spending to lift the debt ceiling, and you call yourself a conservative? When my first pillar is limited government, how? Restrain federal bureaucracy and lower taxes. So when you're doing that, you cannot be a conservative, which is all I'm saying to you is challenge people when they say that. I'm a conservative. What does it mean? You know what you're going to get? First of all, you're going to get silence because they're going to be shocked to even ask them. And then you're going to get this long diatribe of babble. I told you five pillars. Boom, 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 boom. That's simple. I don't try to make rocket science out of this. Ladies and gentlemen, this Constitution was put together by simple men. Did they have flaws? Of course they did. Part of the human condition. Right? But check this out. The brilliance of their Constitution. And I used to get challenged on this. Sheriff, how could you be for the Constitution when the Constitution was written up? You know, it didn't include slaves and it allowed slavery. I said, but the brilliance of it is they put a mechanism in the Constitution and we can change it any time we want. That's the brilliance of it. They knew that issue was going to have to be dealt with and resolved. It wasn't going to be then. They wouldn't have got the Constitution ratified. So they put a mechanism in there. We could change the Constitution anytime we want, but there's a mechanism. One of the mechanisms is not allowing the third branch of government, the courts, do this. It's through the legislature. It's through the states that we amend the Constitution. It's not through the courts. As a matter of fact, the United States Supreme Court twice upheld that ugly institution of slavery. Twice. Dred Scott decision and Plessy versus Ferguson, separate but equal, said, yeah, that's the law of the land. The courts. I don't want to rely on courts for my freedom and liberty. I want to rely on the Constitution. And if we want to change it, we can. Like I said, so if they're by the left, if there's this, they think there's this support to amend the Second Amendment. The Constitution says we can do it, but there's a process, and it's not through some ban at a local level. And it's not going to court and having some judge, unelected judge, by the way, uphold some decision like that. We could convention of states, or you get the state legislature. You know how it works. You get the Congress, two-thirds of each house, right? The House and the Senate, two-thirds to come up with some, thing to amend the Constitution, and then you got to put it through the state legislature. That's how we do it. The left knows we'll never get rid of the Second Amendment that way. That's the way the Founding Fathers wanted it. They didn't want it. So simple. So if they think that should be done, that's the process. And we can have that argument. Should we change it or should we not? But I don't want an unelected judge doing that. And I don't want a city council doing it. And I don't want a mayor doing it. And I don't want a governor doing it. I want the Constitution to do it. Okay? It was the Constitution that freed the slaves. The 19th Amendment. We amended it. The 19th. That's the way to do it. You don't go to court to amend the Constitution. So when people ask me, how can you support the Constitution? It was flawed, but we got it right. And we did it the right way. A Supreme Court decision did not free the slaves. The 19th Amendment to the Constitution. And for you women in the crowd tonight, it was the Constitution that gave you the right to vote. It was not the United States Supreme Court. And it wasn't through some other shorthanded way. We amended the Constitution. Right? The 19th Amendment. 13th is the one that ended slavery. That's how you do it. And that's what I mean when I say, no, Constitution, rule of law.